Which night are we doing finance?
No, I am.
Which night are we doing finance?
Probably tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Oh.
But I'm guessing
right,
it'll be tomorrow.
We'll begin here with the...
unless we get it done that quickly.
Human services budget. Attention, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, the session's resumed.
What's that gavel you used
Thank
to have?
You. That's my alter ego.
Do we still have the gavel? Or?
It's somewhere.
I can't find it.
Oh. All right, so we're going to start here with veterans. Mr. Nelson is not here.
No. So I'm Tammy Capito. I'm the CFO for Human
yes,
Services.
We know that.
And before we start with veterans, I'm just going to do a quick third quarter update. So for August 31st, we are projecting to have a $2.2 million surplus in DHS, $850,000 in aging and disabilities, $1.2 million in children and family services, $75,000 in health, $15,000 in medical examiner. Brookside Care Center through August 31st has a $2 million loss, and Willowbrook Care Center has a $54,000 profit.
What do you attribute the positives to?
It's our placements. DCFS has done some permanency planning changes in their placements. So when we get to the placements graph, you'll see how far under budget we are. And aging and disability in their inpatient and residential placements as well, they are under what they budgeted.
And Brookside, $2 million loss. What's that?
Yeah, so that's directly as a result of the census being down. So we're at 97.6 year to date. We budgeted 134. At the time we budgeted census, we were in having COVID issues, and now we are having staffing issues. So as we do not have staff to fill beds, we are not being able to fill the rooms.
Last year, what was the loss at Brookside?
I do not remember. Do you remember, Patty?
Yeah, I'm just doing some quick math here. I know what we transferred.
I don't have my
own. I want to say it was about 2.2 million.
It was two.
Because we used 1.75 of ARPA funds and 650,000 of reserves at the end of the year in closeout to bring Brookside to break even.
So that's for 21.
That was for 21.
Correct. And what about 20?
20, I believe, would close the year about break even.
I want to say we were like 850 short, but I would have to look.
Yeah, would you report that to the committee?
Yeah.
I'd like to know for the last 5 years what the record is for losses and for gains or break even.
Yeah.
I think that's important for the committee. You'd furnish that tomorrow?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'll be easy to pull. And I'm sorry, on page 9, we do have Brookside's loss for 2021. It was $2.1 million. It's all the way in the right column on page 9.
Yeah, the memory was pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else on
sure.
the third quarter report?
I do.
Yes, Bill.
Willowbrook, you said, was making a profit in the third quarter, and that number is what again?
It is $54,000.
So just refresh our memory. That has two wings, two setups, with a total of how many beds?
24 beds, 12 on each side.
So when we take a look at current occupancy, where are we at currently with occupancy for those 24 beds?
Right now, year to date, we're 23 and a half, and we budgeted at 23.
So I mean, it's really showing pretty consistent demand for that type of facility. So thank you.
Anyone else on the third quarter report? All right, then why don't you go back with veterans?
So page 4 is our whole budget overview. So our levy increase, we are looking for $737,000 or 3.8%. This also gives our personnel, so our personnel FTE decrease of 0.06. Our personnel expense increases 1.1 million. And then it also gives our funding sources. So for the 2023 budget, we have 37.89% of federal funding, 29.06% for state funding, and 18.55% levy funding, and then little other ones. And then we'll go to veteran services. So veterans starts on page 5. They handle veteran benefits, veteran support, direct relief, veteran services commission. Overall, their levy increase they are looking for is a $16,000 increase. As you can see, we have a $17,000 increase in personnel changes. Of that, $11,000 is in health insurance, just based on what the employees are electing. So that's it for their levy increase, really just due to personnel, health insurance.
All right, discussion on veterans.
I would move approval of the veterans budget.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, so the next one is Brookside Care Center. So they are a licensed nursing facility at 154 beds. The first couple pages is their profit and loss. So this shows where they are losing the $2 million. Page 10 is their census. So it's directly related to their census. As you can see all the way in the right column, their daily occupancy is 97.6. We did budget at 134. And then page 11 starts our 2023 budget. So for FTE changes, they are reducing 3.6 FTEs. Two of them are dietary vacancies. So as dietary county personnel leave, we have contracted with Unidyne who take on that FTE. We have a reduction of a 0.4 for life enrichment assistant, a reduction of a 0.2 for unit secretary, and a reduction of a 1.0 for the director of clinical operations. The director of clinical operations is retiring, and we are funding the assistant director of nursing with that position. We funded it half in 2022, and the other half will be in 2023. Overall, the personnel changes is a reduction of 21,000. So you'll see the 121,000, the vacancies of contractual from dietary Unidyne. The removal of the director of clinical operations is 133,000. The half year of the ADON is 59,000. We did defund 7 additional CNAs, so we have a total defunded CNAs of 19.2. That's a credit of 231,000. Then you've got the 1% and 3% wage scale adjustments. And then we do have some reclasses. The life enrichment from an NEC to an NED, the environmental services from an NEB to an NE2 for 56,000, and the CNAs from an NEB to an NE2, 123,000. We had some 2022 wage adjustments for environmental services that equates to 13,000, and for CNAs, 241,000. We have a fiscal manager for Brookside who was contracted, and in 2022 we hired as a county staff, so that's an increase of 81,000, but you'll see a savings in the contractual line. And that's it for the personnel changes.
Discussion. So this deficit, how are you funding that?
So right now, we are not at a deficit. We're at a break even.
For 23.
For 23, yeah. We are budgeting a break even. We did, we have 2,100 going back into the reserves, and we have 185,000 from ARPA. We did have a motion at Human Services Committee to reduce our Unidyne contractual line by 317,000. So that,
where is that?
Right here.
It's 12.
Page. And we need to.
Yeah, it's middle of page 12, the other professional services, $317,000. So as that sits right now, it will go into the reserves or help offset if we do not meet the revenue that we are looking to meet.
Dave.
Mr. Chairman, the committee requested, the Human Services Committee, that we have the chair here, requested that we make an amendment to the proposed budget of $317,756 on revenue and expense. Doesn't affect levy for this Unidyne contract that was reported by the administration. So they requested that. I would so move on this.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Can someone explain?
Yes, so when we presented to the Board of Trustees, Gabe had talked to us about Unidyne, Chairman Nudo, and we went back to Unidyne and kind of negotiated on the labor and maybe closing down some of the kitchens, because they have a neighborhood idea, and so we are not funding some of their positions, and they felt comfortable to still provide us the services and the quality of the food with coming in with that reduction for 2023. And it's really in labor.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Anything else?
I don't think so, unless you guys have questions more on the Brookside budget.
All right,
budget.
On the 23 Brookside budget discussion. Bill?
Looking at your crystal ball, which is always a difficult thing to do, if you take a look at the 23 budget, we would still have a number of beds, at least in theory, available to us, correct?
What do you mean?
We'd have the same number of beds available.
Oh yeah, we still have 154 licensed, yep.
So what would it take, and you can answer me now, you can answer tomorrow night when you bring back more data. Where is the break-even point? How many beds do we have to fill to at least maintain a balance between deficit and profit? Do you have an answer for that?
128.
That's where
budget is for that. Correct,
okay.
Amy?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So it'd be the 120 beds. So number that we budgeted for is the break.
Okay. And so that would remain consistent through 2022. That would be the plan, right? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So why do you think that you'll meet that goal in 2023 if you haven't met the goal for the past 2 years?
I think right now our issue is staffing. It's the CNAs, and we are putting a lot of resources into the CNAs. So between the 2022 adjustments we made and 2023 adjustments, we're putting about $500,000 into the CNA wages. And we're hoping that will retain and attract CNAs and build up our beds.
So how many CNAs are you talking about?
Right now, I believe we're about 15 we need to hire, 15 short.
How many work there right now?
We have 78 in the budget, and we have 19.2 of them defunded.
And but how many are on staff now, 78?
No. How many do we have on staff?
78. I have to pull the numbers, but we're down between 15 to 19 that we would need to actually fill to this
128
number.
15 to 19.
All right, further discussion?
So for the 2023 entry-level CNA, person just starting out, ballpark starting wage per hour is how much?
Proposed.
1743 is the starting point,
mm-hmm.
1979 the midpoint, and 2215 the max.
And 2215 would take how long to get there chronologically in an average situation?
I will defer that to Clara, because I don't know. We did some 2022 revisions to how that kind of shortened
period. We can find that out tomorrow too as well. Just I'd like to have information either this evening or tomorrow. That's fine.
So, if you want to come back tomorrow?
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, the question is, how long does it take to get from the start to the end of the wage scale for a CNA, the $17 to the $22?
Okay, I'll bring that back tomorrow.
Thank you.
So you think that $17 and change is sufficient to attract a lot of people to that job?
Well, it's quite an increase from where we were. Because I want to say we were at like $13, $13.79 was our minimum in 2017. So it's almost a $4 an hour increase. So
that's 2017.
You know, it's a big jump. So yeah, I'm hoping that that helps retain and recruit.
Yes, have it.
I can speak to some of this. I'm a CNA at Brookside Care Center. If I believe the current starting for a CNA is $15.08 right now, I think with the current budget, and that's I think what I started out at. Personally, I believe that this increase in starting minimum wage and increase in wages will attract more. It brings more competitiveness with local other agencies and other care centers and hospitals that are also taking part of our CNA workforce that we have that is so limited. And that this increase could drive more CNAs towards Brookside, which has been revered as a highly wanted place to work at. But I think the budgeting for the CNAs just needed to be a little increased, and that could draw a lot more CNAs to our
Thank
facility.
You. What do they pay for a CNA?
I have no idea.
No idea. John?
To our youth and governance, where are most of the CNAs that you know that have left, where are they going?
I don't know personally much that have left from Brookside because I haven't worked there often long. I've only been there, this is my third month now. It'd just be local areas. I know Grand Prairie gets a good few traction. There's some other places in the area. I don't know all the names off the top of my head.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And
through the chair to Tammy, if you could just very briefly explain what we implemented over the summer in terms of the bumps, the bonuses that are offered, and then also how we compete locally and how there's this sort of revolving door with the signing bonuses.
So over the summer, HR and Linda had implemented the CNAs to be put at the midpoint if they were there for a year or longer. And then if they were already at midpoint, to be at the max. We also implemented $2 an hour additional weekend pay if they took on extra shifts if they were not scheduled. And they also implemented a bonus, sign-on bonus, $500 after 6 months for a referral and $400 if you stayed on after 6 months for starting on. Those were implemented in 2022. I'm not sure if they're staying for 2023.
So it's a referral bonus and it's $500 if they stay for 6 months. The bonuses and the premiums will stay for 2023, but we're setting the new minimum is beyond the current midpoint.
So that's meant to attract and retain more?
Absolutely.
Brian?
To continue that line of discussion, it's meant to attract and retain. Has it been successful? How many have we acquired? Have we closed our gap at all? What's the delta still remain, or is it changed?
I can answer some of that. So, and I missed a portion of it. What I consider the implementation has helped to retain the staff that we have. Incredibly grateful and very useful to have had that occur. So in relation to the referral bonus, I think we've only had one. We do have a couple though that have applied, so if they can stay those 6 months, then obviously we'll get that as well. So it's definitely a work in progress. It's gonna get there. I feel it will.
So you're confident in the strategy. Essentially what I'm asking, did the strategy work? Has it worked?
It kept staff, and that was a large part of it. I think with the wage increases, that will help to then encourage recruitment.
Okay. And the reason I ask that is you want to get to 128 beds. You're asking to have 15 more CNAs to support that bed level. But with the change that was implemented last summer, we have not really acquired new headcount. We've simply stopped losing headcount.
It's been very, very slow. A lot of our students went back to school. That was a huge hit. I think we lost 11 over the summer that do come back each summer. So that was a hard hit to try to keep that. So when these went into effect, that and then the students leaving at the same time, it kind of put us back where we were, because we were ahead with them here. Now we're back, so now we're trying to get back slowly.
So students don't work while they're in school?
A lot of them are students from afar that come home.
Okay, that helps, because my daughter
students.
My daughter acquired her CNA right out of high school. She worked while she did nursing school simultaneously in a county building in Illinois. All right, thank you.
Further discussion? Anything else?
Now for Brookside.
Dave. Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I'm on the Human Services Committee, and we have the chair here, and we also, I wanted to recognize some of the trustees. We have the chairman of the Board of Trustees, Mr. Pitts, Mr. Robert Pitts, and we have John O'Day, and Gabe Nudo is also on the Board of Trustees. And we, in our committee, we took a really deep dive into this budget, talked about the wages, talked about what it would take to open wings, talked about the 128 census and a lot more than that, and we adopted this budget with the one change that we recommended. So, and that I yield.
All right. Further discussion?
Move to approve.
Second. Tim, did you have your hand up?
I was going to say, no. I was just trying to second. But okay.
All right. Further discussion on the motion to approve? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Willowbrook?
All right, so Willowbrook is our 24-bed assisted living facility. Page 18 is our profit and loss statement through August 31st. Like I said, we have a profit of $54,000. Page 19 is where our census is year to date for 2022, so we are at 23.5 year to date. And then page 20 starts our 2023 proposed budget. There are no changes in FTE counts. Our personnel changes have increased 146,000. Of this in here, we do have the CNA reclass from an NEB to an NE2. We also have the resident assistance increase from an NEB to an NE1. And then contractual changes, we had a decrease of 46,000. 38,000 of that is in our Unidyne allocation. Supplies changes, we had an increase of 17,000. And our cost allocation, section 8 on page 21, 13,000 decrease, that's for the fiscal manager contracted to county. Revenue, we are projecting at 23.5 beds per census with a 7% rate increase. We do have 40,000 of ARPA in here, and they're going to start a new revenue source this year with renting some of their furniture in the assisted living. For reserves, they are going to be returning $7,800.
Is that it?
Yes, that's it.
Questions or discussion?
Yeah. What is the 40,000 in ARPA being used for?
It's really to help cover the reclasses in the CNAs and the RAs. When we came in originally with our budget, we were at a surplus, and then those changes created us to need some help, so we do have a slight ARPA fund to help fund that.
So if you didn't have that 40, you wouldn't break even?
Correct. If we did not have that 40, because right now we have about 8,000 we're giving back to the reserves, we would be about 32,000 in the hole.
How much ARPA are we using in this budget? Not this one, but grand total.
Grand total is just over $4 million.
$4
million
in the 23, yes. All departments.
Yes.
Okay, any other discussion? Is there a motion?
No, yeah, I do have a question, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Willowbrook, how many CNAs do you employ at Willowbrook? And you don't appear to have a retention recruitment issue at Willowbrook?
We do. You do not have to be a CNA to work at Willowbrook. You could be what's called resident assistant. So you don't have to be certified. You do have to take CBRF classes. CBRF is assisted living version. So there are classes that have to be taken, but you do not have to go through the entire 120 hours for CNA.
Can we create a two-tier support structure within Brookside? Is that a possibility for expanded support?
You can't have RAs in a skilled nursing facility.
Okay.
Only assisted livings.
But you said we do not have a turnover retention issue. We're pretty stable.
We do. We do have issues at Willowbrook. We just have fewer staff at Willowbrook, obviously, than at Brookside.
Fewer staff percentage would be higher, quicker, so.
Yeah. So, yes, we do have a few open positions over at Willowbrook.
But we can still maintain full occupancy because you have this extra layer of support that you can
leverage. Whole
different
level of care. Yeah, they're not okay. Residents that need as much assistance as a skilled nursing facility would need.
Okay. And Brookside is impacted by state mandates or federal. State requirement, federal, okay.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that.
Any other discussion here, questions?
I would move approval.
All right.
Second.
All right. Further discussion on the motion?
There were no changes recommended on Willowbrook.
No, we didn't have any changes.
All right. Seeing no questions or discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes.
Which one's next?
Office of the Director.
So the Office of the Director on page 23, we have a levy increase of $112,000 or 18.8%. Of this, in the FTE and the personnel changes, we have a 1.0 FTE request for a reimbursement manager. This position already exists, and you'll see a credit in the DCFS budget for the same amount, $109,000. And that makes up really the majority of the ask for the Office of the Director.
Is that on the levy?
Yes and no. We have the savings is in the DCFS budget, which is off the levy as well. So it nets to zero for the $109,000.
So that figure is levy money?
Yes. But there's a credit to the levy as well. It's in the DCFS's budget, though.
Discussion?
Move approval.
Tim, get in there.
Second.
Aaron did. All right. All right, further discussion here? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Central Services, 178 report. Go ahead.
Okay, so Central Services is comprised of two sections. One is the Job Center building costs. That's self-sufficient, it's not on the levy. And then we have the countywide mailroom. So on page 25, you'll see that our purchase services goes down 17,000, but you'll see in the cost allocation goes up 17,000, so they just net to zero. We charge out the rent to equal the cost. And then in the mailroom section, we have an increase of 4,500. This is an increase for our contractual services, just from who's covering the mailroom, going from their insurance coverage from single to family. So total levy increase is 4,500 or 1.9%.
All right, discussion?
Mr. Chairman, the discussion we had here is we requested the department to look at this central services system to be used for the new building because it helps reduce levy. So the committee got on record of with the administration on that, and they will work on that. So,
did you want us to do it?
No, I think we got on record through the committee, through the Human Services Committee. So.
Further discussion?
Move approval.
Second.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Workforce development.
All right, so workforce development, their subdivisions are income maintenance, public benefit services, employment services, and child support. Overall, they have a levy decrease of almost 34,000. They have an FTE decrease for the removal of a business services job developer, and that was 69,000. We do have an increase in our paper service. The company that handles it is seeing inflation and cost prices, so we did negotiate some higher prices to pay him, so that's an increase of 20,000. Our liability insurance went up 13,000. We had some savings in the goodwill contract that's getting charged more to the central services, and we have some slight increases in the vendor costs, but overall a levy decrease of almost 34,000.
All right, discussion?
The Human Services Committee approved this without any adjustment.
Correct.
All right, further discussion?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, medical examiner.
Okay, so medical examiner starts on page 29. We have a few graphs showing where we are with the manner of death. The purple is our 2022 estimate, and as you can see, the accidental has skyrocketed. So last year we were at 55, and we are projecting to be 95 this year. And when you look at the graph below that, it talks about what is causing that. And as you can see, our overdoses are projected to be 55 this year based on where we are right now. So last year we were at 38, this year we're projecting to be at 55. The next page, page 31, shows we budgeted for autopsies for 2022 at 140 autopsies. Now we are projecting to be 167, so we are needing more funds for autopsies, and you'll see that in the 2023 budget. Page 32 starts our 2023 budget. They are requesting an additional deputy medical examiner at an NE9. That cost is $82,000. This is for employee retention. They've got pooled hours at work. This is going to take a second shift and hopefully be able to retain this position. If it's full-time versus on-call and pooled, it'll be easier. And they're taking second shift. That way they would normally have to call someone in. In section four, you'll see the increase for pathology fees. So you'll see an increase of $72,800. Part of it is our volume. We budgeted 140. We're increasing that to 146. And then also our fees increase. So we contract this out to Milwaukee, and our contract has been at $1,500. They have increased their price to $1,800. And then we also have four pediatric autopsies included in this budget at $5,000 each. We do have some fee increases of $67,000, and then the SDART grant is going back to the health division. So our total levy increase is $141,000, or 28.5%.
Discussion? John?
Can you explain again what the extra person is going to do?
They'll be part of the medical examiner's team, so there'll be a deputy medical examiner that will be working a shift into the evening hours that will handle any accidents or any calls that come into the office to respond, versus our part-timers, which we're having difficult to recruit. So there'll be just a full-time person working a regular shift like we have during the day. So
who would do that now?
Right now, that's handled through on-call, and what we've found is we've lost a number of folks that were doing those pager calls to full-time employment in other medical examiner's offices. So the hope is to be able to retain someone to do that work and then have a smaller pool after hours, like midnight to 6 a.m., that would handle some of that on-call duty.
So some of these people work here as well as elsewhere? As
the on-call staff, yes. A lot of them have other jobs that they're available to.
As medical examiners?
A lot of them, no. They have other daytime jobs, and they do this as they're picking up some extra dollars.
Does that require a specialized license?
What you would have to, yes. We would put somebody through training so they get their ABDMI, BMI, I got the acronym mixed up, but it does require training, so Patty's office would get the person signed up to get certified and certainly become qualified to do the job. And if we're lucky, we hire somebody who already has those qualifications and we can move forward quickly.
Aaron?
With us hiring a full-time, does that mean we're going to be paying pool people less? Less often? Not less dollars?
Maybe less hours is the hope there.
So is there an offset at all? Is that in the budget?
We didn't put an offset in there. The whole amount for the part-time, full-time was only like $60,000-$70,000, and we wanted to see how it goes first to see if there will be some savings in that section.
Okay.
And it's AD, American Board of Medical Death Investigators, is what they go to get certified for.
I had a question.
Men?
I had a question for someone who asked, why do we contract out our autopsies to Milwaukee?
We do not have a doctor here. We have a lay medical examiner, and we have found that that has been certainly financially a better deal for us at this point in time. And finding a doctor, a pathologist, to do the work is very difficult. Milwaukee currently has staffing shortages and things like that. So up to this year, we've been in a five-year contract. So that $1,500 was over a five-year period. We're entering another five-year contract at $1,800, which will certainly benefit this community as it goes into years 2, 3, 4, and 5. So,
thank you.
Yep. All right, further discussion on medical examiner?
Mr. Chairman, we approve this with no adjustments in human services.
Further discussion?
No. Motion to approve.
Second. Who is the second?
Second.
All right. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Health?
So health is split into clinic services, environmental services, public health, and outbreak. So they do have some FTE changes. 2.29 additional. There's a couple of clerical errors in there. When we take those out, it'd be 1.24 additional FTE changes. We have a 0.65 school nurse in there. That was a clerical error. So we did have a motion to reduce the budget for $68,287 for that. And then we also have a public health nurse. I'm sorry, the public health nurse is the one we reduced for, the 0.4. The 0.65 school nurse is what we reduced it for. The 0.4 public health nurse is not reduced because there was revenue to offset, so that was a wash. They have some position changes from an admin assistant senior to a public health supervisor. They reduced a public health nurse and increased a strategist from a 0.5 to 1.0. They also reduced a public health nurse to increase the strategist from a 0.5 to 1.0 for home visiting. The two positions they do have in here is for a public health strategist for prevention. This was approved by the county board on October 19th. And a public health strategist for the clinic. Also, both of those are ARPA funded. This was approved by the county board on October 19th as well. So these are 2022 changes. We have a reduction, a slight reduction, public health nurse prevention of 0.13, and we have an increase of a public health strategist for asthma of 0.25, which is funded. Overall, the personnel changes is an increase of 500 and almost 513,000. And we are reducing that. We did have a motion at the Human Services Committee to reduce that 68,000. We have the 1% and the 3% in here. And then we have the SAMHSA changes in the home visiting grant. Those are all grant funded. The ARPA funding is in there as well. In fact, the full increase, the 444,000, is really funded with other funding, SAMHSA and ARPA.
So there's there. What is how does that, what does that do to the levy?
Well, their levy on page 37, we have an increase of 378,000. Once we reduce it, the 68,000, we have an increase of 310,000. And really, all of that we can attribute to the city of Kenosha, the city contribution going away. So we are phasing that out. So 2023 starts a $700,000 payment. In historical years, usually the city was around $1 million as their portion of the health division. Last year, due to COVID, we had the split got kind of skewed from city to county because of the vaccine clinics. And we did supplement that with ARPA. So last year, the city contribution was $400,000, and then we added $400,000 of ARPA to help for the vaccine clinics. So going from $1 million to $700,000 increased our levy $300,000.
And again, what is the amount of ARPA funds here?
Well, there's no countywide ARPA funds in this budget.
In 2023.
The ARPA funds that are in here are specific to the health division only. It was not the countywide ARPA.
It was direct ARPA funding to health, not
further discussion.
So, Mr. Chairman, you can see what happened here. ARPA, if you look on page 37, it's worth repeating, because this is one of the biggest increases in levy in the county budget. We had the $482,468 city contribution plus the ARPA of $495,463 in 2022, and then that went down to the $700,000 city contribution number in 2023. It was really going from almost $1 million to $700,000, causing almost $300,000 of that it's almost all of the $300,000 increase after we make a motion to reduce the levy for the $60,000 that we'll do later. But so that's really what happened. We used ARPA to balance the budget and then fill the hole. We had to fill the hole with levy in 2023.
John.
Okay, you kind of lost me on these public health strategists. You know, how many of these are grant funded? But you went from 4.75 to 7.65, so it's almost an increase of 3. Can you? And then didn't you say that one of those was taken out of the budget by the committee?
Yeah, the 0.65 and the 0.4. So there's one 1.05 that we took out that were just clerical errors. Those will be in the adopted budget. So really the increase is 1.24. 2.0 of that was in 2022, and that was approved the October 19th, 2021. Meeting.
So that might clarify if we made the motion to reduce the levy by the 68,000. Could you please restate the exact dollar
yep,
amount?
It's $68,287.
And I would make a motion to reduce the levy, and that's a levy reduction for that amount.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes. Further discussion on this health department?
I would move approval as amended.
Second.
Further discussion? The committee did not feel there were any other way of reducing this large levy increase. It's over 25%.
In committee, we recognize that the county board adopted an overarching policy of phasing out the contract, so we'll have to absorb that over a period of years. So that was county policy adopted last year, I think. So. Mm-hmm.
And there was no other way that the contents of the budget could be changed?
We didn't, other than that $68,000, we didn't task the department with further reduction. I mean, we took a deep dive into the budget and spent a lot of time discussing it, but we felt that this budget met the needs of the community. And it really, we're implementing a policy change that the county board adopted last year.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Our next item is the aging, disability, behavioral health.
So for the aging, disability, and behavioral health, their subdivisions are the Adult Protective Services, the Resource Center, Community Living Support Services, Transportation Services, and Behavioral Health. Page 39 just shows where their surplus is that we're projecting for 2022. So in behavioral health, they have a $737,000 projected surplus. The next graph just shows where crisis contacts and detentions are. And then page 41 starts the 2023 proposed budget. In the FTE changes, they have a additional 0.25. This was for a full position added in 2022, but it was added second quarter. So this is the additional 0.25 to make that a person, a full person in a full year. Their personnel changes is an increase of $29,000. Most of that being the 1% and the 3% changes. There were some social worker reclassifications in this budget. That was $8,000 of it. Their public liability insurance went down $31,000, and their building rental increased almost $12,000. So a couple of the big items between the aging and disability and behavioral health services and the Division of Children and Family Services is we've combined some of the programs with juvenile and adult. So one of them we combine is our crisis services. So the crisis services now reside in the aging and disability behavioral health services, but now they handle both juvenile and adult. And then the comprehensive community services now is in the Division of Children and Family Services budget, and they handle now both juvenile and adult. So we're really just trying to make efficiencies and combine them. So you'll see some big numbers down here. In the behavioral health services, you see an increase of $2.7 million. That is for the comprehensive community services. You'll also see a decrease in the revenue section on page 42 of $2.6 million. So the revenue and the expense, it's 100% funded, are going to the DCFS's budget. There is an increase up here for $321,000. That's for the crisis that they're taking from DCFS's budget. And their overall levy decrease is $82,000, or a decrease of 1.7%.
So are the other budgets increased by a comparable amount?
We do have an increase in children and family services. But not attributed to those efficiencies, more attributed to the personnel changes. So the community comprehensive community services, it's one for one, the revenue and the expenses match. So, and then the crisis services, children and family services has a slight increase for their child protective services. They're kind of modeling it, doing a different model, the second shift model. to kind of create more efficiencies. There is an increase for that model change.
All right, discussion?
Mr. Chairman, the committee adopted this with no change. Human Services Committee adopted this with no change.
All right, further discussion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right, further discussion on that? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Children and Family Services.
So the Children and Family Services comprises of the Child Welfare Services, Youth Justice Services, Out-of-Home Placements, Children with Special Needs Services, and Prevention Services. Page 44 shows our placement graphs. So the red line is our actuals and where we're projecting for 2022, and our blue line is where we've been budgeting. So as you can see, it's been going up, and now you see we right now are projecting to be 9.3 million for placements. We had budgeted 12 million, so a big surplus in our placement budget right now.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. So can you give a basic explanation for why it took such a drop from 2021 to 2022?
Yes. So Ron, who's the director, he has been working with this project permanency plan. We added additional help in the DA's office to help get TPRs and permanency going through faster. So they got through a big backlog in there, as well as he hired on some additional social workers, and all of the social workers are getting trained with the termination of parental rights, which only a few used to have, which used to bottleneck it. So some of those have been changing the trajectory. And if you look at the next page, page 45 of 47, it shows where we budgeted. The first section is where we budgeted for August through August. The middle section is where we actually were, and then the last section is where we are, the variance. So as you can see, our prorated days is 68,000. We had budgeted 68,000 through August, but our actual days of care was only 53,000. So we had 15,500 less days in care and placement days that attributes to this surplus.
Thank you.
Could I ask a generalized question? Is maybe something you can or you can't answer. I'm sure it falls outside your purview. But when a child is in an abusive home or an environment, I would assume that in most situations those homes or households also get other assistance for having that child living there, et cetera, for whatever programs they qualified for. When we take them out and locate them elsewhere, do those resources follow them, or do they continue in that household while we add resources to take care of the child in a different location?
So that's a good question. Most of the resources, if the child is removed from the home, the child's going to receive whatever assistance he or she needs in that new placement. But the family is also receiving services with the goal of making it a safe environment for that child again. So if there's addiction issues, behavioral health issues, job issues, domestic violence, we are putting services into that home to make sure that if it's all possible to get that kid back, that he or she is going back into a safe environment. So they're both receiving services at the same time. And that is generally handled through a court order, where we're court ordered to provide services to the parents in an effort to see if we can get that child or children returned to their care.
So they double down. They get whatever, food assistance, housing assistance, all the other assistance that they had with the child there. The child is now out, and we add other services to train them to be better parents or create a better environment, plus continue to provide food, housing, lights, all those things, and the child in another location.
You're assuming that everybody that goes through that system receives some sort of aid, and that's not necessarily.
I understand, and I mitigated that at the front end of it.
And if I could finish for a second, what generally would happen? If your household determines what kind of aid is coming in there. So if you are receiving assistance for food share or any other type of economic support, it's going to be based on the size of your home. So if children are removed, you're going to receive less assistance in that way. I'm talking about programs that we put in there to try to help that family stabilize and improve whatever that living situation is that caused that child or children to be removed from that care. Mm-hmm. So yes, the other programs that are run through economic support or things like that are based off the size of the home. So that would shrink.
Okay, so when we remove a child that's placed through the court system in a safe environment or whatever environment it is, do you report that back to the other service divisions and take action at that time?
Yes.
Okay. I appreciate that because I've been chewing on it for a little while. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Daniel
has a...
Yeah. Along those lines, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but families who have children in foster care, families who have their children placed in foster care, are often charged for that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So then they end up paying child support back to the state and the county.
Correct.
So if that helps answer any questions.
Yes, with the change.
What's that?
There has been a change in how we can collect that. That the amount of cost of care. Before we were able to do that in the child welfare court or youth justice court, the state came down and said we are no longer allowed to do that. It has to go back into a family court hearing, which delays the process to collect some of those funds. So you'll see a reduction in the budget of $200,000 in the collections area.
Why was that changed?
That was the state coming down and saying you can't do that anymore. You've got to separate those courts.
You have the rationale for it?
I believe they're saying it was the way they're interpreting child support laws, federal regulations, coupled with state regulations.
So the end result is minus
$200,000.
That's what we're projecting. We were one of 16 counties that they came in and said you have to stop that practice.
Hmm. Okay. Mr. Chairman, in committee we took a really intensive review of this budget too, and we had a significant discussion. It was one of the biggest increases in our levy, $290,000, and our levy went up how much in total? 1.3. So it went up 1.3, and this is almost 300,000 of that levy increase. And I was thinking it would be good for this committee to make a motion to contact Wisconsin Counties Association to get this matter on their legislative agenda to determine whether we can change state law or if necessary federal law so we can go back to the way we previously were handling this and restore that $290,000. So I was thinking our committee could make that motion, refer this matter to Wisconsin Counties Association with an objective of possibly restoring this $300,000 that we lost in the 2023 budget. So I would make that motion.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
So tell us, if you know, was this because of legislative action of the Wisconsin legislature signed by the governor, or is this rulemaking authority by a bureaucratic department?
I believe the latter part of that statement. So I think it's coming from the feds on down. This is really the feds have a very, very strict rules when it comes to the child support and collections. So I think it's the state interpreting those rules. It wasn't anything new in legislation.
Yeah, we could do that.
The committee chair.
But I don't know that that's going to do any good. But yes.
I'd like to also mention it was brought up in committee by Nina Taylor that there's also the possibility going forward at the state level, there is some initiative to eliminate that child support collection altogether. So we would have to be watching for that in the future. This particular reduction is a prediction that it will slow collections. They can still collect, but it's going to slow down collections. So they're saying we won't be able to collect as much as quickly. But we need to watch in the future if we're going to be able to collect at all, and if we're not, how are we going to make that up?
Yeah, it's hard to understand why would you want to slow it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but
I mean, that's the goal, to achieve the goal, but why?
We're understanding it's an interpretation of federal law by the state, but I think we probably should include, you know, looking at the whole thing to make sure that we're not losing this $820,000 of levy that we use, or levy reduction that we had for the 2022 budget. I mean, it could end up evaporating or declining even further. So we need to at least take some action and have it looked at. And
right. So we did push back hard on it, but they weren't budget.
Yeah. So the state.
That's the State Department, though,
yeah,
right? We didn't go to any legislators or to the federal government.
No.
It was, as the chairman said, bureaucrats and the human services. What's the name of the agency now? It's changed. I used to work for it. It's changed.
I'd have to look it up, Dave. I don't have it right in front of me. Who oversees child support?
So the problem started when you
were
there.
Further discussion on the resolution?
Not when I was there. So.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. And
further discussion on this particular budget?
And we did in committee discuss the good work they did to reduce placement costs. I mean, it really went a long ways to help us balance the budget. So it was really, they really did, that really, it wouldn't have happened had they not done the work you heard in the report today. So.
Yeah, we had a great report through Judiciary and Law about it as well. So.
Bill?
So just to echo what you said, it was truly a collaborative effort between Judiciary and Law, Human Services, DA got involved. You know, it's really kind of all the wagons pulling in the same direction to get it done. And one of the opening statements was made, in this particular budget for Department of Human Services, we're looking at approximately $4 million in ARPA funds. Is that correct?
No. That was countywide. So this one, I think we just have ones for Brookside, which is 185 and then 40,000.
Okay. So 4 million, the county.
We do have 250 and
280,000.
For Brookside? Well, explain for everybody.
There's $280,000 in DAD's budget, in the behavioral health budget. And that was, there were grants that they lost that in 2022 they came forward to the board and asked for $210,000 to replace that. It was drug treatment court and I can't remember the other one. So they requested in their 23 budget for funding for those same programs.
So we're seeing how much in ARPA funds in this particular budget here?
Brookside and Little Burke were 225, Dad's was 280.
Yeah, 280.
And I believe that was it.
That was it,
So the methodology in which this came through, this come through from the Fed specifically marked for human services and segregated for human services, as opposed to the other funds that were more of a general county fund? Is that my understanding, or is that not true?
The 280 and the 225 for Brookside is the countywide ARPA funds.
It is countywide ARPA funds.
Sorry. The ones in the health division are health specific, only to the health division.
Coming from
not
the Fed?
Countywide.
Yes.
Okay. From the Fed,
right. That clears it up. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Yeah,
I'd like to address the question that was asked earlier about the CNA availability and where we might see some of these CNAs going. So I go to school out in Wilmot, and Wilmot offers through Elkhorn, the Gateway in Elkhorn, a CNA program that is a semester-long program that gets, on average, 10 to 12 persons that are available to be go for certification in CNA and for their CNA certification. And so I know people that look to Burlington for the closer approximation. And so if there could be a way to advertise or to even just draw more people to Brookside, which I could see through a wage increase, I think we could maybe start pulling some of the younger generation through of CNAs that are coming in through this work, through I'd say maybe average 20-ish probably of available persons to go for certification from Wilmot alone a year. And so with a wage increase, we could potentially see them taking that travel distance or taking the transportation out here to maybe get jobs more in town or in the city or potentially a person.
Very good. So when you say 10 to 12,
give him a promotion.
So Wilmot has the availability of a maximum of 12 students in the CNA class at one time, and that takes up a portion of each semester. And I think unless it has changed from last year, they can fit two classes in, one each semester. And so with differences in want and demand for spots in that class, I'd say it averages probably 10 to 12 students per semester per class. So on average, an availability of, I'd say, probably 20-ish students that could go for their certification. And so how many go for the certification, I don't know. But I do know that because of the closer area, there are a lot that look to Burlington for jobs out there. And so if we can look into it and maybe start to get a little more competitive with Burlington, we can drive up, we could maybe see an increase in demand for coming out to Brookside and making that travel. Because I know from Wilmot, it's about approximately a 45-minute drive, which isn't appealing to most. But if the wage were to be there, I feel like there would be people that are willing to make that jump.
Do you notice Central High School had that same program?
I do,
you
not know if Central does.
Okay.
If there's no further discussion, is there a motion?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there further discussion? Right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That completes our, at least our projected time of 9 o'clock or thereabouts.
We'll do that tomorrow. Finance tomorrow.
Yes, so tomorrow we have finance plus what we have listed here as budget finalization, 6 o'clock.
Is there motion to adjourn.
The market is
second.
Well, the market is
high.
Thank you.
We have the.